And we've got Chris Clark on the line from Crook in County Durham. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Ron.
Morning. Now, Chris, you're now an armchair detective. You were a detective in the Norfolk Constabulary until you retired 20 years ago. More than 20 years, wasn't it?
Yeah, 24.
24 years, Chris. Yes, and now you're writing books about previous unsolved murders. So, what is it you want to talk about this morning?
I just briefly mentioned the two books already published are Yorkshire Ripper: The Secret Murders, and The Face of Evil: The True Story of Robert Black. But this morning I want to go back to one of the other books I'm writing. It's the story of Christopher Halliwell, who I'm convinced is a millennium serial killer. And on Tuesday coming, it's the 10th anniversary of one of these women, I believe, as one of his victims. It's the anniversary of Claudia Lawrence, who was a chef at the University of York. And she disappeared on the very early morning of the 19th of March, 2009, on her way to work for a 6 o'clock start. She phoned her mum the evening before, and she'd also phoned someone in Cyprus from her home address, but nothing was ever heard from her since. And North Yorkshire police quickly established that she'd been murdered, but with no body found. And basically, the circumstances are that when the police searched her home, all the signs were that she'd had her breakfast that morning and she'd coloured her hair because everything was left out for her to return home later and clear up. But missing from the home were her straighteners. Clearly, she was going to do those at work. And she had a rucksack, a Carrymore rucksack, which she carried her chef's whites in, has never been found. Anyhow, basically, there are various sightings of Claudia on her way to work that morning, which are quite suspicious. The first, she was seen talking to a man who was described as a left-hand smoker. Well, Christopher Halliwell fits that description, and also the description of the man fits him. And then there was also a car seen outside the main university premises with a passenger door open and a man and a woman apparently having a domestic argument. Now, later that day, a member of the public saw an identical blue and grey rucksack in a small lane at the side of the university, which leads down to the fishing lakes. And when the police went to retrieve it, it disappeared and it's never been actually found. So it's quite apparent that was the point of abduction. And Claudia's phone was deliberately turned off at 10 past 12 that afternoon. That's the story so far.
Chris, did she not have any traces, anything on like Facebook or anything like that on her phone that might have been able to help the police?
This was just before social media sort of took off, so there's nothing apart from her mobile phone, which has never been recovered, so there's no phone records. It's quite indicative of the quick abduction method that Christopher Halliwell used. And just a quarter of a mile from her home is a very popular narrowboat pull-up venue by the nearby river in York, which connects to the main River Ouse. Leading on, I actually looked at it myself afresh in 2016, and one of the vehicles that the police were looking for, I was able, without actually moving from my seat, to establish that it was a white Astra van that had nothing to do with Claudia's disappearance. It was just that it was parked outside the fish shop on the evening in question, and I quickly found it by Google Street View, parked in a street behind Claudia's, where clearly the person who used it lived. So So I contacted North Yorkshire Police with that information. So quite clear they didn't really put that much input into it for me to establish one of the suspicious vehicles. The other one was one that was captured on CCTV around about 5:45 that morning, sharply braking outside Claudia's address, but just the rear of it was seen. And to me, whether it was Christopher Halliwell turning up in his taxi to collect Claudia, or whether it was just a member of the public braking for Claudia crossing the road, we'll never know.
How far did she have to walk to work from home?
It was about 1.5 mile journey. Again, the police said it was a 3 mile journey, but I actually did it by point A to point B by Google with a walking distance, and it's just 1.5 miles.
And was there any CCTV footage anywhere along that route?
No, strangely, although she went the same route as she had the day before, the afternoon before CCTV had picked her up, I think it was the post office on the main route through, had shown her actually returning home from work that day, but there was nothing established the following day on the route, which again I find surprising, because having gone down that route at street level, there are a number of private CCTVs which are apparent on the route. So again, you have to wonder what groundwork was done. It would appear to me that it was very parochial thinking, and North Yorkshire Police up to date have arrested 5 different middle-aged men who clearly had nothing to do with Claudia's abduction. They were just on the fringe of a relationship or friendship with her.
And how old was Claudia at the time when she went missing?
She was 35 and single, and an attractive lady, very popular. In fact, she went to the local pub, the Nag's Head, which was just 2 doors away. But a lot of play was made about her private life, which it seems to be that women who are single are not allowed to have a private life, where if it's a man, it's a completely different story.
Now, so when was she last seen or heard of prior to going missing?
And she actually made a phone call to her mum about 9:00 that night, because it was Mother and Sunday in a few days' time, and Claudia had arranged to see her mum. And she also made a phone call to a friend in Cyprus. But I say everything was in the house in order. There was no disturbance in the address, and the police were able to establish that she'd had breakfast and had left home voluntarily. So she was clearly abducted on her way to work. It's also the same anniversary, the 19th of March 2011, 2 years later, when Sean O'Callaghan went missing. And Wiltshire Police very quickly got onto the trail and arrested Christopher Halliwell on suspicion of kidnapping her. And he basically eventually led Detective Superintendent Steve Fulcher to where her body was, down an embankment, where he'd thrown her out of his motor vehicle because he knew the police were catching up with him. And he also took them to another body he'd buried in South Gloucestershire, and that was Becky Godden Edwards, who'd gone missing in about January 2003. And since then, Becky's mum has befriended Claudia's mum, and they actually had a meeting. Becky's mum has actually been doing some private detective work and established that Halliwell had roots in the north. He did groundwork in the north, and in fact she found a witness who can actually say that on one occasion prior to her disappearance, Claudia was seen talking to Christopher Halliwell through his taxi window and asking him for some change to ring her dad from a nearby call box. So there's a definite link, along with the other assumptions.
Well, yes, there certainly is, and so the situation is that she went missing 10 years ago and never seen or heard of since, and there's not even a crime scene, is there?
No, as far as I can establish, the crime scene is where the rucksack was found dumped,
right,
seen by a member of the public. When the police went to retrieve it, it was gone, and around the same material time, the mobile phone was switched off and obviously dumped in water, so there was no further signal from it. Now, just down from where the rucksack was found is a popular university fishing lake, well stocked, and I would have suggested, had I been involved in the case, that lake was dredged, because there's a possibility that might be where Claudia's remains are.
How long was it before she was reported missing?
It was the following morning when she actually failed to turn up at work. She was reported missing then, and say that it would appear that she was abducted from outside the university after a struggle inside this motor vehicle, and down the lane at the side of the university where the rucksack was found.
Right, okay, so there's no further information about that. Now, if anybody listening out there has got any information, please get in touch with Chris, and how do people do that, Chris?
I have a website which is www.armchairdetective.org.uk, and I would just like to further say that in 2017, North Yorkshire Police said that they weren't investigating Claudia's case any further because all their lines of inquiry had been exhausted. However, they have not, as far as I'm aware, gone down the road of looking at Christopher Halliwell as a definite suspect, which myself, Steve Fulcher, and Becky Godden-Edwards' mum feels they should be. And there's also 60 items of clothing that were recovered around a pond in Wiltshire, which was clearly Christopher Halliwell's lair, because two items were established as from his two known victims. So there you have 58 other potential victims.
I can remember a little bit about it, and there was a search made on some land behind the house as well at some point, wasn't there?
Yes, but the land behind the house is exactly where this white Astra van was found, so
right.
It wasn't that much of a search. That they were looking for a vehicle captured on bus CCTV they were trying to find, and it was there in front of their nose.
Right, okay then. Well, Chris, we'll have to leave it at that, but if anyone out there has got any information, no matter how small it is, please get in touch, and Chris, you will pass it on to North Yorkshire Police.
That's right, yes.
Okay then. Is there anything further you want to mention this morning?
I'd just like to briefly mention, I mentioned last week the case of Mary Boyle from Northern Ireland in 1977. Her anniversary is actually on Monday, the 18th, because it's St. Patrick's Day tomorrow. And she was in the area where she was abducted from for that reason, St. Patrick's Day, 1977. So I'd be lighting candles for all three of these ladies.
Okay then, Chris, well, thank you very much for coming on today, and we'll speak to you next week at the same time.
Thanks very much, Ron.
Thank you. On the line from Durham, we've got Simon Donnelly. Simon, good morning.
Good morning, Ron and Ian.
Morning. Now, Simon, you want to talk about a charity that you're involved with at DNS Kennels in Durham. It's the SoSad charity. Just tell our listeners about that.
Yeah, well, supporters of stray and abandoned dogs, that's SoSad for sure, was set back up in 2008 by a group of Animal Mad volunteers. And as you mentioned, Ron, it's based at DNS Kennels Rescue Centre at Langley Moor near Durham. And our aim is to raise funds for the fees attendant to the stray and abandoned dogs that are in it at the rescue centre. because the dogs come in either through the dog warden, Darlington dog warden, or through people, perhaps the circumstances have changed, and they bring the dogs in to put them up for adoption. And the vet fees can sometimes total up to around £2,000 a month. So as you can imagine, our job as volunteers to raise the funds through activities, through sponsored walks, we're having one in May, all different types of things. We have very generous donations from supporters, not only money but food as well. So it's quite an important role that we play along with the team at the rescue centre.
Now, when people bring these dogs in, what happens to them from the time when they're brought in?
Well, there's two different ways. As I mentioned, the dog warden, when they bring them in, they have to be given, I think, 7 days to enable their previous owner to claim them if they wish to claim them. If they're not claimed after that period, then they put up for adoption. The only problem is that we don't always know how they behave or what they, if they're house trained or anything like that. Where the dogs that are put up for adoption by individuals and perhaps the circumstances have changed, you've gone into sheltered housing and things like that. It means that we've got a better idea of what their temperament's like and things like that. But we rely a lot on the kennels team to, you know, give feedback on what they're like, and also the volunteers that take them in centre parks. What we hope is that they'll be rehomed as quickly as possible, really.
And yes, because there's a non-destruction policy there, isn't there?
Well, that's it. We're so proud as a charity to support the non-destruction policy. It means however long the dogs may be in at the rescue centre, that we can look, make sure they're well looked after, and all the fees are covered for any vet fees or anything like that. So, yeah, we're very proud that we can support the non-destruction policy at the rescue centre.
And are you looking for people to volunteer and also to donate money as well? So how do people get in touch with you, Simon, if they want to help in any way?
Well, there's various different ways. If they want to get in touch, perhaps if they want to volunteer dog walk, and they can contact the rescue centre directly. Tom is an amazing chap. He's the volunteer dog walker coordinator. The rescue centre can be contacted during business hours on 0191 378 0439. Or we have our Facebook page, which is Supports of Stray and Abandoned Dogs, SOSAD. We also have our website, www.sosad.co.uk, and that's quite useful because it has a contact button on it. It has a button that will take you through to the dogs looking for forever homes, and it will also have a donate button on there if you wish to donate a sum, or if you want to set up a fundraising activity, you can do that through our Virgin Money Giving page, which is quite good.
Or if any companies out there might want to help you through sponsorship, that would be good as well.
I mean, that'd be fantastic. We have our Wet Noses Fun Day sponsored dog walk and dog show with dancing dogs, believe it or not. Margaret Hunt and her team are bringing on along these dancing dogs. We're hoping that we might even get a glitter squeaky ball trophy somewhere in the mix there. But yeah, it'd be a great opportunity if a company wanted to advertise their wares to sponsor perhaps one of the classes in the dog show. It's quite fun, relaxed, and it's great seeing all the dogs that have found the forever homes coming back and seeing how well they're doing.
And people come down to the kennels with some of them bring food down for the dogs as well.
Well, it's amazing the generosity of people. I mean, Chris and Jean, not only have they brought food down, but they've donated towards funds for dogs' operations. And Omia has, I think, one of the dogs from Romania is having to have an operation. And Jean and Chris are absolutely amazing. The support that they've given, I think we mentioned previously on your show about how they donated that much food and blankets, that in the photograph of them donating it, you could hardly see it. And I think you could just about see the top of Chris's head. So it's unbelievable.
Yes, it would be. It'd be strange if the tins of food fell over in front, wouldn't it?
I mean, health and safety would have been a bit. It would have been a bit iffy. Yes, but luckily, a lot of it was complete dog food. In these big, huge sacks of dog food, and they're great because we can mix those. Those different mixes to, you know, that suits particular dogs' dietary needs. So that's been really, really useful for that.
Okay then, Simon. Well, thanks very much for coming on. Finally, can you just give your contact details once again if anybody wants to help in any way?
Yeah, the Rescue Centre, Ron. That's 01913780439. There's the website www.sosad.co.uk. There's the Facebook page, Supporters of Stray and Abandoned Dogs, SOSAD, or people can email me directly, perhaps if you want to look at sponsorship, simon017@btinternet.com.
Simon, thanks very much for coming on. The best of luck with the charity as well.
And thanks very much for the invitation.